And so it stays just on the edge of vision, a small unfocused blur, a standing chill that slows each impulse down to indecision. Most things never happen. This one will. Hello, welcome once again to the Pocket Gamer podcast. I'm your host, Rob Hearn, and with me today is Fraser McInnes.
Hello.
Hello. Not Chris anymore. He's never with us really anymore. And not Tracy either. Tracy is with Chris in San Francisco. What the hell was that?
I am blessed with the fight that is Street Fighter 4. I turned the silent thing on my iPhone, but it still seemed to want to make a noise. My iPhone's playing up. I don't know what the deal is. But yeah. Sorry. Yes.
That's okay. I was a bit worried that there was a lion.
I was actually just trying to soundtrack the podcast, provide some drama for Chris being with Tracy, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure that is pretty fiery. Tracy's over there, John Jordan's over there as well, and so is Alex Rennie, who also sometimes comes on the podcast. They're all having fun. It's amazing, actually, technology. I was in the office the other day. About 5 o'clock, Rennie wakes up in his room in San Francisco, comes on the messenger, says, how's it going? Obviously, it was, you know, the insults. Then he said, do you want to see San Francisco then? So he put his webcam on, and then he was holding his laptop out of his window, showing me the Golden Gate Bridge.
Wow.
So it's amazing. I mean, it's not like we had to download some special program to do it.
No.
It's just with Messenger, which used to be this thing that, you know, all you could do is say hello to each other on.
Yeah.
You can now show people where you are.
Yeah, yeah.
10,000 miles away or however far away it is. So that was pretty good. And you mentioned Street Fighter. That's one of the big news stories of the week. But let's get around to that later.
Okay.
Because we've done no preparation this week. It's been even without Tracy to keep us in line.
No, that's true. Yeah, Tracy's the man with the knowledge. His knowledge is power, and without him, we're powerless. That is basically it.
And knowledgeless.
And knowledgeless. I've got some knowledge for you, if you like, but it's not iPhone related or even gaming. Well, it's sort of gaming related in a really odd, silly, stupid way. But I was nearly mugged the day before yesterday.
Really?
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, as you know, Rob, but our listeners won't know, I have to go to London reasonably often just now for my company to go down to EA, which is wonderful but also awful because I hate London. And it's not even that I hate London, I just mostly hate stepping outside my flat because I'm convinced that something terrible is going to happen to me. And so I went to London, and it was the most joyously simple occasion ever. Every train seemed to arrive just as I got on the platform. There was always a seat for me. You know, every cup of coffee was delicious. Every single little detail of the trip there and back went without even the slightest bit of discomfort, and it was amazing. And then it was about 11:15 at night, and I was on the final leg of my journey from Preston to Lancaster, and there was this really shifty-looking homeless guy on the train. And I remember just kind of, you know, in that sort of way that you do automatically, I remember just marking him out as a potential threat, you know, and just thinking, give that guy a wide berth, you know, just let him be, you know, because he looked just shifty. So, got off the train, and the way that I have to walk home from Lancaster train station is you go through a park, which is kind of abandoned, and then under a railway bridge, and then through a sort of little wood. And it's all very secluded and lonely, and there's not really any people around or anything like that. And it's a little bit spooky at night. And so I went to go to the first part of that, so it was the park. And when you get to the start of the park, you can see right to the end of it, so you can see if there's anybody there. So I got there, and there was nobody there, and I thought, oh, that's good. It's fine. I don't need to be on my guard. I'll just walk, you know, quite casually. I was being so gallant and brave as to listen to a podcast in one ear. At the same time, you know,
right. Disadvantaging, you know, yourself.
I wasn't I didn't have my guard up. My guard was down, you know, and Ricky Gervais was in my left ear, you know, squealing. I got about kind of a quarter of the way through the park, and I noticed, shit, there's the homeless guy standing taking a piss against the wall. So I just thought, right, okay, I'll just, you know, I'll just ignore it for now. I'll just keep going. It's fine. Picked up the pace a little bit, put my headphones in my pocket, and I kept going. I looked around once, couldn't see him. Looked around again, fair enough, I could see him walking, that's fine. Bit nervous by this point, because I'm carrying a bag with a laptop in it, and it's a bag that's very obviously a laptop bag, and this guy's homeless, and perhaps a laptop would be enough to feed him for several months. So I get to the end of the road, and at the end of the road I think, right, I'm not going to turn and look, but when I turn right at the end of the road, I'll glance quickly so I can see him. So when I did that, I glanced, and he was sprinting towards me. So at that point, I kind of got that sort of spooked gazelle kind of thing and started to sprint myself. But I can run quite fast, I have to say. I was quite proud of myself. I was like Chris Akabusi, but without the awugas. And I sprinted to the other corner, and then I got there before he got to the end of the park, so he wouldn't possibly have been able to know where I went at that point, because I turned off, so, you know, I could have kept going straight or turned off, and he wouldn't have been able to know. And I kind of sprinted most of the way home from there, and got home in a bit of a fluster. So yeah, that was my experience of nearly getting mugged.
That sounds that's amazing. That sounds like a zombie movie. Yeah. When you're describing it, it sounded exactly like a zombie movie, but with a homeless man.
It was
what kind of
homeless
man
was
he? Was he a big guy or?
He was husky, I would say. So for that reason, like, I suppose, do you know what? I wasn't really that scared because I was very confident of my ability to outrun him. Not just because I felt like I would be a faster runner than him anyway, but because I actually had a reasonable head start on him as well. And when he ran, he had sort of almost like kind of, he had really tightly curled, curly hair with bits of food in it, I remember, from the train. And that was kind of like bouncing around like a sort of afro. And he was a homeless guy that carries lots of carrier bags, so they were slowing him down a little bit too. So he sort of looked like a sort of sprinting zombie, I suppose, with a kind of really kind of rag-like jacket and bouncy hair and lots of bags. So it was like being accosted by a very masculine-looking bag lady.
Wow, yeah, that's good. I've often thought this. I'm the kind of person who's never really going to get in a fight in my whole life.
Yeah.
But one time I was in a pub in Edinburgh.
Uh-huh.
And I was sitting with a friend, and this homeless person came in. It was, you probably know it, the Doctors up at up near the university.
Yeah.
So we were sitting in there. This homeless guy came in. The barman immediately kicked him out. The barman is quite a student-y bar. The barman was obviously a student himself.
Uh-huh.
Kind of escorted the homeless man out. And then there was a bit of a kerfuffle outside, which we didn't see because we were inside, they were outside. But we saw that the barman kind of pushed the homeless man against the window.
Right.
He'd obviously kind of stayed to explain to him why he couldn't come back in.
Yeah.
And my friend said, he's clearly just doing that because the homeless guy is, you know, it's like a desperate down and out alcoholic who can't fight back. And that's the only opportunity that guy's ever going to have to act hard.
Yeah.
And I thought, yeah. Then I also thought, So if I, that's, so I quite like the idea of getting in a fight with a homeless, like a really down and out homeless person who can't fight back. Basically.
This is appalling. I don't even want to know how this ends.
No, I've never done it. But I'm just saying, when you were talking there, and you said you ran, I was thinking, I'd need to know what it looked like. But I think I'd probably see that as like my opportunity that I've been waiting for my whole life to win a fight with someone who is desperate in a, you know, circling the drain of life already. And it's just well, you're weak, you're malnourished, you're an alcoholic, you're very unhealthy. Let's go.
Yeah. Oh, geez. I mean, you're right. I mean, that's the thing. Even if this guy had caught up with me, I think, you know, he looked quite drunk on the train already, which is one of the reasons why I gave him a wide berth. And, you know, I am no Jeff Capes by any means. I'm more like a sort of microwaved lettuce leaf in the hard steaks. But I think that this guy probably wouldn't have presented too much of a challenge. If you just kind of pushed him away, he might have stumbled and fallen over kind of thing. But, yeah, it was still quite scary.
Yeah. Well, it was a good week for it.
Yeah.
Because, check this out.
Go on,
this
then.
Is a hell of a link. Because Tekken was confirmed for iPhone and iPod Touch.
Woot. That's awesome. That's a brilliant segue.
I know. And I had options there because Street Fighter also came out this week.
Yeah.
but let's stick with Tekken. I was away last Friday at a wedding, and that's when this piece of news broke. Tracy, a contact of Tracy's, got in touch with him and said, guess what, Tracy? There's a Tekken game definitely coming to iPhone and iPod Touch. This was an anonymous source. This is our favourite kind. And cause it sounds all, you know, dramatic and mysterious. Yeah. And said, Tekken is definitely coming. Namco has not denied it, which means it definitely is coming. but they did say, but we're not going to be showing it off at GDC, which is something Tracy speculated. So we haven't seen anything of it yet, but Tekken is definitely coming to iPhone and obviously iPad. That's going to be good.
Right.
And it's going to go head-to-head with Street Fighter 2, which did come out this week.
Street Fighter 4, you mean?
Street Fighter 4, of course. It is easy to confuse them, I have to say.
Yeah,
being that they have largely the same set of characters and it's the same moves and everything. But that came out this week. And I've had a quick go of it. We're going to try and have a internet matchup at the end of the... It probably won't happen.
I've already discovered that it's not going to work because it's a bit of a rip-off, and this is actually something I'm going to use to criticise the game, and that's that you can only play by Bluetooth for multiplayer matches, and that invite a friend thing, that's just to actually encourage people to buy the game. All it does is it boots them out to a link where they can then buy the game from the App Store.
What a bloody rip.
That's daft, isn't it? It just doesn't make any sense at all.
Well, that's not friend.
Why don't you play the same game as I'm playing, but not with me? I don't get that at all. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
sorry, I'm actually playing it right now, and it's really brilliant.
Yeah. So that's it then. Two fighting games. Not only did Fraser nearly get in a fight with a tramp, but... two fighting games have come out on the iPod. what a universe.
What a universe, yeah.
So that's good. So I'm looking forward to the inevitable Street Fighter versus Tekken. X versus Y is quite a kind of common feature, but yeah. I feel that it's never better than with a fighting game. Then it's, a fighting game versus another fighting game.
Sure.
DS versus iPod Touch, pretty good. Street Fighter versus Tekken, oh yeah.
I'm getting quite a deep insight into the inner workings of your mind here, Rob. I can just imagine you yesterday when the news of Tekken came out, just the gears cranking around and you thinking, bing, feature.
Definitely. A perfect one.
Yeah. For
this fighting game versus other fighting game.
Yeah.
There can be no better feature. Unfortunately, we can't write it yet because Tekken is not out.
Right, yeah, of course. I wonder if they're going to make an iPad version, like an iPad optimized version of Street Fighter 4 and obviously Tekken as well. Because I get the feeling that I'm sure I read somewhere that there's an iPad version, like a specific iPad version of Tekken, rumored at least. And because it's got a pretty meaty brain in it, that thing, so it can push around a little bit more pixels than the iPhone can. So I'd be quite keen to see if that comes about, you know.
Yeah, well, this is amazing. This is like your trip to London.
Okay.
Because you've just given me another link.
Wow.
Coming to iPad, you say? Well, Zenbound 2 was announced exclusively for iPad.
Ah, I saw that. Yeah, that's interesting. That's very interesting because
I know
it's such a big game for the company for NG Moco.
Secret Exit.
Sorry, for Secret Exit. It's a really big license. Sold millions and millions and millions of copies, probably in brackets because I'm not exactly sure the sales number figures, but they sold loads anyway. Which means they're really betting a lot on the iPad, because even if they release in the first week of the iPad, you know, by the end of the year, how many iPads are going to have sold? You know, maybe even like only 1 or 2 million. So it means that's, if they need to sell to all of those people to replicate the success that they've had on the iPhone kind of thing. So it's an interesting move, but I commend them for it. I think it's bold, and it's good to see people backing the platform so confidently, you know.
Yeah, I do think it's very risky, though. It makes me think that they were thinking, oh, this is going to be great. No one else will be the only ones, but yeah. That's not going to be, unless they know something about how the games are going to be organized on the App Store that we don't.
Yeah, that's possible.
It's going to be difficult for people to know that it is an iPad optimized version. So they'll still be going for the flight controls and the bejeweled twos and things like that. But we'll see.
Yeah, the thing about the iPad is that, you know, of the 75 million iPhones that are out there, there's probably quite a large chunk of people who are not actually that bothered about the App Store or who don't use it because they bought the device as a phone and, you know, that's their thing. And you know, they maybe buy one, maybe two apps a month. The iPad, on the other hand, it's hardwired to the App Store. People who buy it are going to be buying it because they want to download apps and use games and things on it. So I think the attachment rate for the iPad is going to be higher than the iPhone, possibly.
Yeah, I think that's credible.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's already some big news, and I'm not doing this as I usually do it by choosing the most important story and working my way out to the less important ones. I'm just doing it chronologically.
Dwindling away to nothing.
Yeah, exactly. To, you know, Pac-Man comes out on iPad.
Again,
But so what I'm doing is just working my way chronologically, and we're still not out of last week yet. What a week, end of week that was.
Sure.
But we can, but now we're in this week. Silent Hunter for our iPhone. That's come out. Psh, all right then. Don't know really much about that game, but
no, me neither.
It's quite a big deal.
The name rings a bell.
Yeah. Monkey Island 2, rumoured for iPhone. So this is interesting. Tracy's been talking about a Monkey Island game being revealed at GDC. He got an invitation that very obviously hinted at LucasArts, or from LucasArts, very obviously hinting at a Monkey Island game.
Yeah.
And his call was Tales, you know, the recent games. And I have to say, well, like in the first place, I thought he must have known something in order to say that it was Tales. But it always seemed more likely to me that it would be Monkey Island 2. But in a way that it wasn't even worth having a rumor about, you know what I mean? Like when people were saying, oh, Monkey Island 2 might be coming, oh, this was the beginning of the week. Monkey Island 2 might be coming, oh, they might show it off at GDC, as if it was some big exciting rumour. It seemed to me like, of course. They released Monkey Island 1.
Yeah.
Why aren't they going to do 2? But anyway, that's what is coming. Monkey Island 2 Special Edition is coming to Xbox Live, PC, Mac, the PSN, and although iPhone wasn't one of the platforms announced in the first place, and it's not listed on the site for some reason, on the LucasArts site, somebody asked them on Twitter whether it was going to be coming to iPhone as well or which platforms it was coming to, and somebody from LucasArts told them that iPhone was one. But this is not particularly surprising, but brilliant news nonetheless, because I think Monkey Island 2 was even better than Monkey Island 1, which means I'm going to have to give it 11 out of 10.
Yeah, that's a problem. We're going to have to come out with a new just for that game. We're going to have to completely have a new scale on Pocket Gamer.
Yeah, it's going to be like Spinal Tap. this game goes up to 11.
Yeah. Yes.
But it's going to be terrific. So the screens are out. It's the same story as Monkey Island, Secret of Monkey Island, really. It's just looks nicer. It's going to have Dominic Armato's voice acting and lots of others. The voice acting in the last one was brilliant from everybody. So then it's going to be the same deal here. It was when Monkey Island 1 came out on Amiga, it was on 4 discs. When Monkey Island 2 came out, it was on 11 discs. So it was much bigger, and a lot of that went on graphics, which is not going to mean as much now because all of the graphics have been kind of standardized across the one and two, but it was a much bigger game, and it was fun and had more jokes, and it had some stuff about his lost parents, which is quite moving in places. It's going to be great. It's out in the summer. Just buy it. Just immediately buy it, whoever you are.
Okay, I will, and I'm sure many of our listeners will too. So it is exciting, though. It's really, I think the point-and-click genre has found its home on iPhone and on touchscreen devices. I mean, I didn't come to them, you know, on PC, but just, I think, you know, by making them portable, by adding that element in as well, that just completes the picture for me. You know, it really does make them seem like that the iPhone and other touchscreen devices are perfect for point-and-click adventure games. So it's good to see them finally. It took a long time, because I remember when the DS came out, everyone was going on and on and on about how they wanted Monkey Island and Grim Fandango out on the DS, and there was that Scum emulator thing that everyone downloaded, and there was a lot of petitions sent off to LucasArts to make it happen, and now on iPhone it's all happening, so it's great.
Yeah, I really like it. It's because what I like about the iPhone one is, I know that people do spend a lot of money developing games for iPhone, but I still think that it was because it was an XBLA game, because it went to the mainstream consoles as well, that's and PC, that's why they made such a good job of the production on this. Because yeah. I don't think if someone was making an iPhone game, like a dedicated iPhone game, they would have spent that much on voice actors. They must have spent a lot, because these people are all very good. So I think that's what's behind it. I think it's because it's a kind of perfect storm. They've developed it for a very big mainstream console.
Yeah,
with much more kind of commercial potential than the iPhone even. And then they've just ported exactly the same thing across to the iPhone, which is obviously a very easy thing to do.
Yeah.
Profitable as well. And that's why it's so good, I think. Basically because it was developed for other platforms.
Yeah.
But it's going to be awesome. And the other thing is, my one criticism of Monkey Island was that Guybrush Threepwood was a boy. And they still had Dominic Armato voicing him, and Dominic Armato is a man.
Right.
And that never made sense to me. In Monkey Island 1, he was a kid. In Monkey Island 2, he's a kind of 15 or something, and he's trying to grow a beard, but it's all like bum fluffy. And in the game, people keep making fun of him about his bum fluffy beard.
Right, see, that's interesting, because Monkey Island, The Secret of Monkey Island on the iPhone was my first ever contact with the series whatever. And because of that slightly older sounding voice that does the voice acting, my assumption was that this character was like 19 to 25 kind of age group. That was his age. So that's interesting that because I didn't play it through very far yet to find out how old he is. So, but yeah.
Yeah, no, he's supposed to be 12 or 13, I think.
Right, okay.
He's probably a little kid.
Right.
So I thought that spoiled it a bit for me. Monkey Island 2, that's not going to be such a problem, because by that point, you know, his voice would have broken and it all starts to make sense. But yeah, it's going to be this is the game I'm looking forward to most.
I think, what are your thoughts about this sort of a game on the iPad? Do you think that's going to be, will that bring even more to the experience? Will that make it even better?
It will be better on the iPad, yeah, I think. Yeah.
I suppose the game's already been, as you said, like, it's developed for a console audience. So it's already been designed so that it can scale up to a big TV and look really good and still look really crisp. So on a bigger screen on the iPad, presumably it's going to look really, really good.
Yeah, I think all games are going to be better on the iPad, really, except there's going to be certain games that aren't optimized for it. And so people notice when the iPad was first kind of announced.
Yeah.
That Nova. Every time I say Nova, I nearly say Halo. but when people noticed that the controls, it kind of didn't work, because the controls were for a smaller thing, and your thumb had to reach a very long way across the screen to reach them, and that stuff. And obviously, the Gameloft will have fixed it by now, I imagine, but because they only had a couple of weeks to develop that version.
Yeah.
But I think as long as the game is optimized for the iPad, they'll all be better on iPad. And like a lot of games, things like Plants vs. Zombies and Bejeweled will automatically be... I know that PopCap actually isn't developing or isn't going to release games, optimized iPad games at first. It's going to wait.
Yeah.
But I kind of... And it's going to wait and, you know, try and develop them properly and make the best use of the hardware, which is perfectly sensible. But I also think its games won't really need to be optimized that much, because they'll be fine, because it's not that big, the iPad. It's not.
But do you know, one of the problems with the iPad that I've been hearing back from developers to my companies is that it's brilliant, the bigger screen size, and yes, the scaling thing, like the double pixel thing, is fine. It makes it easy to scale things up. But the iPad has a slightly different screen ratio to the iPhone. So there's the kind of like a scaling problem in that things look like they're kind of slightly the wrong shape, or you have to add borders to when you scale it up to make it work. And I think that's going to be a problem for some games. Although it might also be one of the reasons why people choose to develop iPad specific versions as well, rather than just having a kind of scaled up iPhone version, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's in any case, iPad or iPhone, whatever you've got, even if you've got an Xbox, this is definitely a game that's worth playing, particularly if you've never played it before.
Okay.
But stick with it. Be patient. I know that modern gamers now, they probably don't really want to you know, solve puzzles and things. I know I don't. But it's really good. So The Hero, Chillingo's The Hero came out.
Yeah.
This week. That was sort of, there was a bit of buzz about that. I've been playing it, actually. I'll talk about that later. Because Tracy's away, I offered to do the review, which clearly I haven't had time to do.
Yeah.
But it's, it's out. Anyway, we'll talk more about that later.
Okay.
Elis is a good game, and the developer has announced a follow-up game called Far Away. Not going to talk about that, so we're going to move on. What else have we got? Okay, next page. Behind the curtain. The Graveyard. That hobbled onto iPhone being the headline I used. Have you heard of this game, The Graveyard?
No, I haven't. Oh, actually, I think I was checking Pocket Gamer yesterday. Is this like an old Mac game that's now been ported over to the iPhone?
Mac, yeah, or PC. It's a game in which it's a kind of art house game.
Yeah.
Where you do is you play an old woman and you walk her into a graveyard. I downloaded it and played it. It's a free game, and you start at the entrance to a graveyard, and you walk down the kind of central path, and you sit on the bench. And then once she sits on the bench, she goes into this reverie about her memories and death. And then she gets up and she leaves. Uh-huh. And you can choose to pay for it. I think it costs £1.19.
Uh-huh.
If you pay for it, the only difference is sometimes when she's sitting on the bench, she spontaneously dies. And sometimes she doesn't.
Right. Okay.
And that's it, really.
That's it.
Yeah. So it's 10 minutes worth of game. The graphics are very nice. But it's, if you're looking for a kind of Blastathon, Pac-Man type thing, then you might be disappointed.
It's quite interesting now that we're actually at the stage that we can even use the term art house game without having to qualify it or explain it.
Yeah, I mean, they've existed for a long time. They've always been there, I think probably since the beginning. And now there's a huge number of art house games. There's that guy, what's his name? He writes for Gamma Sutra, he's done stuff for Kotaku, but he's a real video game academic.
Uh-huh.
He ran Water Cooler Games. I can't remember his name. But I think he makes these kind of art house games.
Yeah.
So they've existed. But what's interesting about this is that now someone like Pocket Gamer has an opportunity to write about them, and lots of other sites that Joystick and Kotaku all did as well.
Yeah.
So it's what's really interesting is that the art house is kind of seeping into the mainstream, and it's because of the iPhone version. This game has been out for a long time.
Yeah.
People haven't really talked about it, but as soon as it came out on iPhone, not just handheld sites like us, but also the Kotakus and the Joysticks covered it. So it's funny how the iPhone sort of brings people together.
It
in my
is.
News post about it, I got to quote a verse from my favourite poem.
Uh-huh.
Do you want to hear it?
Yes, I do.
And so it stays just on the edge of vision, a small unfocused blur, a standing chill that slows each impulse down to indecision. Most things never happen. This one will.
Author of that?
Philip Larkin.
Ah, Larkin. Okay.
I love Philip Larkin. He's my favourite poet. And that poem is called All Bad. I'm getting it up now just in case I can see any other classic lines that I want to read out.
This thing about art house games, I think, is really interesting, what you're saying there about how art house games are starting to invade the mainstream with quite a high degree of success. I think there's quite a compelling argument to be made for the likes of Braid being an art house game, Or you know, that developer, I can't remember the name of the developer. I think they might be a fully Sony-owned company now, but the company that made Flower and Flow, I think they're quite sort of, you know, they're quite, there's quite an abstraction there in terms of experience. It's all about trying to give the player a certain feeling without really presenting them with a hard and fast challenge, you know? I think that's quite interesting. And I suppose even the likes of Okami, you know, actually taking it into a really mainstream sort of genre, the RPG genre, it's beyond its painterly style. It's got various other kind of slightly arty sensibilities. But yeah.
Yeah, the other classic example is the Team Ico games, Ico and Shadow of the Colossus.
Yeah, and their new one, The Last Guardian as well.
Oh, I'm getting to this point now where I feel like I need to buy a PS3.
Yeah, me too. Like next month, by the time we get to the end of April, I will own a PS3 because I have to get my hands on some of the stuff they're up to just now on that console.
Yeah, that's the thing. I've never been bothered up until this point. Like, I've been happy to say, well, I've got my 360. I'm not going to spend all that money just to play Uncharted and, you know, a couple of other games. But now, they've got... I quite want to see Heavy Rain, God of War, which I really like. And if this Last Guardian is any good, that's going to be it. I'm going to have to spend the money. It makes me sick, but...
You can get one for... I've actually already started shopping for one because I made this decision a few weeks ago. And the best deal I've been able to find so far is on Amazon. There's a new seller that's selling PS3's new, the new model, 120 gigabytes for £217 with one controller. No games, but I think that's a pretty fair price considering an Xbox is about £200, so that's all right.
Okay, well, when I come to buy one, I'll get you to repeat your research.
Yes, I'll send you the links, but yeah. We're going off on a tangent here, but that's the great thing about Sony, is that I must say that although I love my Xbox and it's a brilliant games console, I do think that Microsoft tend to be really, really good at taking other people's ideas and then building on them. But in terms of actually pushing the envelope themselves, I think Sony are quite adventurous and they're not as risk averse as Microsoft. Like you said there's Heavy Rain. They put a lot of money into that. That's a proper kind of AAA big headline title. You know, it's not some little project that they farmed off to a little developer, you know, to just see how it turns out. That they've put a lot of muscle and a lot of weight behind that. And I think it's quite a commendable attitude to trying to push the interactive medium forward.
Yeah. It's gonna be good.
Yeah.
Okay, so what else have we got?
Also iPhone's good.
iPhone in some ways. It's also good. So Namco is to release an iPad compatible game in March. Don't know what it is. Could be Tekken. Never know.
Could be.
So what else have we got? Geo Defense 2 was announced at GDC. The 2002 FIFA World Cup South Africa coming to iPhone, announced at GDC.
Yeah.
Oh, here we are. Splinter Cell.
Yes.
Coming. So that looks good. It's Terminator Salvation Engine, just as Tracy predicted.
Yeah.
It's looking very nice and 3D-ish.
That really was the biggie this week, wasn't it? That was the megaton news item this week, the confirmation of Splinter Cell.
Yeah. So, I mean, we had heard about it. I think we spoke about it on the previous week's podcast. They put up a teaser site, which basically made it very obvious that it was coming. But now we've seen it. Tracy's had hands-on with it, and it's looking good. It's exciting. The other one is Zombie Infection, which is not the same kind of license, but I think it's even, to me, this is even more interesting because it's the same sort of thing. It's a third-person, over-the-shoulder game. It's by Gameloft, so the next question is, what's it ripping off? The answer is Resident Evil, by the looks of it. But it's...
I don't think they're even trying with the names anymore. I mean, fair enough, if they're going to do a copy, that's okay, but Zombie Infection, that's actually literally just taking the elevator pitch for Resident Evil and using it as the title for a game.
Yeah, but it's already a property on mobile.
So there's
a Zombie Infection game on mobile. So but it's so different from it. So it came out last year. Spanner reviewed it, really, really liked it. I think he gave it a 9 out of 10.
Okay.
It's kind of 2D side-scrolling thing, and it's apparently very good. It's got good kind of plot and dialogue and these kind of things, and the gameplay is fine. So I would have assumed, if someone had said to me, oh, Zombie Infection is coming out on iPhone, I would have assumed it would just be a kind of fancier looking port of the mobile one, just like,
yeah,
like Castle of Magic was a kind of 2.5D version of the mobile version, for example. But it's not at all. It's a full 3D Resident Evil console clone.
Excellent.
So, and it looks, and it actually looks really good. It's more, you know, for my money, it looks more interesting than Splinter's Cell even.
Right. Okay. Well, that's really, really good news, because to be honest with you, I've been pretty underwhelmed by the attempts at Resident Evil games on the iPhone so far. So given Game Loft's track record for quality, you know, this could be pretty special.
Yeah, I think it might be.
Cool.
What else have we got? Gears of War. Epic have said that Gears of War iPhone port would be more difficult than just pressing the button. Me. Okay. Hands on with Fishing King's iPhone. That was another game that Game Loft announced. This is a fishing game in which you use your iPhone or iPod Touch to simulate the act of fishing. Why? Well, fishing games are very popular now. And I, apart from playing the fishing kind of sub game in two Zelda games, which I sort of enjoyed, I haven't really had much experience with them. But obviously they're a big deal. Alongside Splinter Cell, Game Loft also announced a fishing game called Fishing Kings. Graphics look nice, but it's, you know, it's about fishing.
Yeah. There was. Do you remember that game that came out that was one of the launch games for the new N-Gage?
Yeah.
What was it called?
Hooked on Creatures of the Deep, wasn't
it? That's the one, yeah, yeah.
It looks alright. I mean, I have played one actually. I might have even reviewed it or previewed it. It was a Shadowlight Games. Shadowlight is a very good mobile developer. They did Table Tennis Star, which is my favourite game of, I think, 2007 rather. It's all good.
It's all good.
So we're back to Monkey Island.
Yes.
In our chronology. So we've been at the rumour. Now we're talking about the real thing. It's here. It's coming. There's no doubt about it. Let's see what else we've got. Games Master, that television program, might come back.
Yeah. That's for me, that's pretty big news. I mean, will Dominic Diamond be involved?
Well, that's basically what my news story is all about. I wrote it up because it's not, you know, directly associated with what we do.
Sure.
I have such fond memories of that program.
Yeah.
That I decided to write it up. I thought it's funny how there's never really been, apart from Games Master, there's never really been a decent television program about games. I said this in my story. Someone pointed out that Charlie Brooker's Game Swipe is good. I never saw it, I really like Charlie Brooker, but I had no interest in watching Game Swipe. And I think to me this is the problem. It just, in my head, it doesn't add up. Like, I've got no interest in watching a television program about games for some reason.
Yeah.
But Games Master was the one that somehow made it work. And I think it was down to Dominic Diamond. Because if you remember, there was one season where he wasn't in it. And Dexter Fletcher did it.
Yeah.
Games Monster!
Yeah.
And it was rubbish.
Yeah, no, I remember that.
It needed... Because I think video game culture, and maybe... Yeah, no, I'd say this is pretty universal. Video game culture, the journalists involved are generally these quite, you know, very literate, intelligent people who are able to wield sarcasm and irony and are generally quite funny people. Or the good ones are.
Yeah.
So obviously I exclude myself. But and Dominic Diamond really embodied that. Like, he embodied the spirit of all the computer game magazines I used to love when I was a kid and a teenager.
Yeah,
and you have to have that. I think someone like Dominic Diamond can't. Someone like Dexter Fletcher can't pull it off because he's not part of it. It's very cliquey, I think.
I totally agree. I think that's a really good point. I would encourage you to watch Games Wipe, although there's only the one episode so far as I'm aware. It was only a one-off thing that he did.
Right.
So yeah, it's not like there's actually. I don't think it's really comparable for that reason, because, you know, it's not a series or anything. But yeah, Charlie Brooker certainly falls into that same description that you just gave there, you know, that Dominic Diamond's also part of, you know, that's quite sort of I don't know if bookish is the right word, but certainly sarcastic and successfully so. And yeah, Dexter Fletcher was just a bit too much of a cockney geezer, you know? A bit too pally.
White boy.
Yeah.
I have to say though, I want to say this. I really, really, really like Dexter Fletcher as an actor. If ever I see Dexter Fletcher in a film, I think, oh, brilliant. It's Dexter Fletcher. He's always in the background. He's in quite a lot. Just pops up in the background. He doesn't ever take starring roles. He had quite a big role in the Band of Brothers series, the Steven Spielberg, Tom Hanks series. And he great performance he gave in that. He gives a really good performance in everything. I love him, but he is not a Games Master host.
No.
But never mind. I really hope Dominic Dunn has kind of been spoiled for me, though, over the years, because he keeps appearing on these Channel 4 Talking Heads things.
Yeah, yeah. He's obviously a bit skint.
So really, undermines his credibility.
Yeah.
But never mind. Hopefully either he'll come back and it'll be his revival, or someone else equally good will do it. Street Fighter 4 review went live today and it got an 8 out of 10. I just thought I'd mention that.
That's a good
score. Yeah, I got one comment from Momo111. The game is really good. Touch controls are also good. But we need an online multiplayer because none of my friends have an iPod Touch iPhone.
I agree with that. I would like an online multiplayer version as well. Or more,
It seemed to echo the remarks already made. The controls are good. This works very well. Needs an online multiplayer. But I don't get this. Because none of my friends have an iPod Touch, that's not going to help him then, is it?
No, iPod Touch does have Bluetooth.
Yeah, but he said, because none of my friends have an iPod Touch, comma, iPhone.
Uh-huh.
So it's...
Right. So I suppose that his point is then that he can just play randoms online. You know, you could just play it...
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Okay, he's sorry, Momo111.
How do people choose online handles like that? I mean, I don't understand. I'm not going to try to understand.
When I'm playing on the 360 and I'm looking at, say, I'm on Battlefield 1943. I think it's 3, isn't it? It's not 2.
It is, yeah.
And I'm playing around and I can see the tables. What amazes me is I can't believe more people don't take more pride in their name. Because there are some really shoddy names.
Yeah, yeah.
Just, you look and you think, eh, what else? Because my name on it, because when I first got my Xbox, I was a bit, sort of, I didn't really understand Xbox Live and the whole idea of having a profile. And I called myself Dynamite Ham, which is a Woody Allen reference. I'm not disgusted with it, but I don't like it. I want to call myself Master Hayward, and I want to capitalize the letters. I have actually reserved that name for myself by registering another account. But I can't... You have to pay to change, so I'm never going to do it, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I look around, I can't believe that other people haven't... They don't seem to agonize in quite the same way about what their handle is, and they just go, eh, whatever. ABCD1234, that can be my name for the world.
Numbers in your name, that's the worst thing ever, because that somehow, to me, signifies that you went for one name and realised that a million other people went for another name, for the same name, and you weren't creative enough or able to think of something else, so you just add a number. You know?
Yeah.
I find that. That's wrong, kids. It's just downright wrong. Don't do it.
Super lazy.
Yeah.
My email address... is, in order to avoid having Rob Hearn and a number, I had to include my middle initials. So it's Rob S.C. Hearn. And that has caused me untold trouble spelling out my email address to people. What's your email address? Rob S.C. Hearn. Rob Shearn. Rob Shearn. No, Rob Hearn. But I go through it because I don't want the world to think that I'm lazy and I just use numbers. Excellent point. So we've stitched them up then.
Absolutely.
I don't think anyone's going to be trying that anymore.
No, that's done with.
Yeah.
Put the world to rights.
So we should go to the rumor mine, I suppose.
Okay.
Rumor. Rumor.
Here we are.
Here we are. Any rumours, Rob?
No. Well, see, we're at a bit of a disadvantage here because we don't... The rumour miner hasn't turned up for a shift this week, so we haven't got his to draw on.
Ever since they got unionised, those rumour miners, it's just been a nightmare trying to get them to do anything.
They're untouchable.
Yeah.
But, I mean, some things have happened this week. I mean, there have been some rumours about Monkey Island, but then that got solved.
Yeah.
I suppose Tekken still kind of counts as a rumour, but not really. There is iPhone 4.0 may have multitasking and gesture controls.
Ooh, I'd like that.
Yeah, and the iPad may have multitasking as well.
Okay.
So that's a rumour. But what I thought we could do is go through, because last week's rumour mine was a GDC prediction special. So now we can put the rumour miner to the test.
Okay.
See what came true. Okay, so let's see what he's saying. Tales of Monkey Island. Tekken. Uh-huh. Splinter Cell. Yes. Okay. So he was right about 2 out of 3 of those.
So that means that the rumour miner is right to fight for his pay rise and more overtime. He is worth it.
I don't know. He's 66% hit rate so far. I mean, that's not... You'd expect more from somebody.
I suppose. It's not a home run.
No, certainly not. But that's where we are so far. But let's keep going down the page.
Okay.
Unreal Engine License 3, too rich for iPhone developers. Blood. So what's he saying here? That people won't use the Unreal Engine 3. I don't really know. Maybe.
They might do. Let's wait and see. That's neither here nor there. I don't think we can use that as a basis for judging the rumour miner's hit rate.
Yeah. Okay. Let's just pretend that doesn't exist.
Okay.
It's software to offer gaming relief with Quake 3 Arena. That's a no, really, isn't it? I don't think we've seen that.
Not yet, but I'd be very surprised if that didn't come to pass in some shape or form.
Yeah.
Over the next year.
Certainly it could happen. And we spoke about it last week, didn't we? Id Software are very, very keen on the iPhone. Well, mobile gaming generally. They've done a lot for it and
they're
on
pro
it.
Pro iPhone, yeah.
So it would be, and Quake 3 is possible. I've expressed my reservations about the port on a previous podcast, but it could happen, but it didn't happen this week.
I've just thought of one that I could make up right now, a really good one.
Okay.
Right. This week, Valve announced that Steam, their digital distribution service for computer games, which has up until this point been a PC exclusive service, is coming to Mac. So by extension, maybe we could end up with a Steam app for iPad or iPhone, where you can then download a select bunch of optimized titles for those devices. Is that a rumor?
Is it at that level yet?
It's a
probably
wild
not.
Guess, really, I suppose.
Why not? It might happen, and it would be good, wouldn't it? Portal on the iPhone has been something that has been bandied around. Someone's had it running, haven't they? Some leaked hacker
the scans
type.
For Portal 2.
I haven't really been looking at it. Weirdly, because I love that game.
Oh my god, honestly, it's just killed my anticipation for anything until that comes out, really. It looks incredible.
Hang on, here we go. I'm going to look now then. It's live on air.
Yeah. Game Informer. Game Informer, which I believe is a US gaming magazine, has got like a sort of 6 or 7 page spread about it. And basically, the thing that sold me was that Valve, in that article, said that Portal 1 was merely a testbed to see if they were happy enough to carry the franchise forward. So it looks like it's going to become a franchise that's kind of as important to Valve as, you know, the likes of Half-Life. And the games are going to reflect that, and that they're going to be much longer, much more story-orientated, more characters, just really a much deeper, richer experience, and it looks amazing.
Okay, I'm trying to... I haven't got any screens up yet. Portal 2. Yeah, here are my feelings about this. I really did like Portal a lot. I thought it was very good. And the thing Valve said, yeah, about the Portals, I think they said something like Portal's a demo and, this one's the game.
Yeah.
Makes sense. But then I've heard that on other podcasts that it's, I don't know, they've put the argument across, and I kind of buy it, that it's a self-contained episode, and that it doesn't, in the same way that Bioshock didn't really need a sequel, maybe this doesn't really need a sequel. But I don't think that's a very strong argument, really.
I think it's truer of Bioshock than it is of Portal 2. I'm almost disappointed to see... it's funny, Bioshock 2 got good reviews, but I've been really resistant to buying it, because Bioshock 1, I know you disagree about Bioshock, the franchise in general, but for me, Bioshock 1 was such a great self-contained experience. There was no narrative threads that were left unexplored there. You know, and it was quite a narrative-drawn, driven experience that I'm quite reluctant to get into Bioshock 2, because I don't want them to just kind of flog a dead horse. Portal, on the other hand, I feel like there was far too many unanswered questions about the whole like mythos of the Aperture Science thing. That's the thing that I think that Valve are really, really good at. It's no surprise that the Half-Life series has got like an entire wiki kind of site devoted to the mythology behind it and the whole overarching structure, the myth arc, if you like, of the story. And I think that Portal is going to be the same kind of thing. Apparently the Portal 2 is going to be set over 100 years after the original Portal in a completely desecrated, dilapidated, destroyed Aperture Science facility. So, yeah, it looks very exciting.
Interesting. Although, I have to say this now about the Half-Life series. Half-Life 1 is, I really do think, one of the best first-person games ever still now. It's a brilliant game in the way it's paced and everything. But as soon as it got, you know, when you went to other planets at the end, when you went to Xeno, I think it was, it instantly became pretty much crap. I thought, like, it really could have done without having that. It needed an editor to say, you know what, this game's really good. Don't go to a funny, floaty planet. You'll ruin it. And they didn't listen to that hypothetical advice, and they did ruin it. Half-Life 2, it's a good game. But, you know, I don't have anything
Just be
against
very,
it.
Be very, very, very careful here, Rob.
I don't think there was any need for that either.
Oh, man, come on. Really, Half-Life 2 is still, and I think has a very, very real chance of always being probably the most important gaming experience of my life, really. Like, it's just... The fact that I get... You know what? When people talk about giving out high scores to games, they always say, oh, well, you know, you can never give out too high a score because games are such an evolving medium that by the time we get to 2 or 3 years down the line, this game's not going to deserve anything like the score that we're giving it now. Half-Life 2 is one of those very few examples of a really timeless game. I really do think that when I'm, you know, 90 years old and arthritic, I'm going to ask my grandson to sit and play through it so I can watch him play it. Just, you know, in the same way that people enjoy old classic Hitchcock or black and white films or something like that now. I really do think it's a timelessly brilliant game.
I think, everything you've said about Half-Life 2, I would say about Half-Life 1. Half-Life 2, I don't... Like, narratively, I think it didn't... It just doesn't... I mean, this is very personal thing, but it doesn't appeal to me in the same way. Like, the idea of being on your own in that place and not really knowing what's going on, I thought was conveyed very well in the first game. And the way the environment was so tightly controlled, and there was always this palpable, like, desperation to get out. And that's what you were looking for, and you could never quite find it. And I thought they got that across really well. Half-Life 2 came along, and it was the whole thing was on a much grander scale, and there were other characters involved.
Yeah.
It's not a criticism of the game, but it's in terms of my taste, I didn't like it as much because it didn't have that same tension. It didn't have that same, like, a first-person game for me is innately a lonely thing because other NPCs are never going to be other people. But so I thought it worked very well on those terms, and Half-Life 2 didn't work as well. But for me, it was quite a landmark moment for me as well, in a way, when I played Half-Life 2, because it came out at the same time as GTA San Andreas, you'll remember, or, you know, I think they were about 2 months apart. And I played San Andreas first. In fact, I bought a PlayStation 2 in order to play it. and sold the PlayStation 2 after I finished it. That's how much I wanted it.
Yeah.
So I played that, and then Half-Life 2 came along, and I interrupted San Andreas in order to play Half-Life 2. I got through Half-Life 2 in about 3 days, probably.
Yeah.
Then went back to San Andreas, and I remember thinking at the time that this is it. This is no more first-person shooters for me, because this is not working for me anymore. Like, I'd played so many first-person shooters up until that point.
Yeah.
That when San Andreas is this one thing where it's like this massive world, and there's so many different things you could do, and it was just really kind of sophisticated and open world. And then I went to Half-Life 2, and it just felt really restrictive and controlling. And I thought, there's nothing. Yeah, okay, the gravity gun is a good weapon, but it's fundamentally this is just another first-person shooter. And I've played loads now, and I'm kind of. It doesn't feel to me like the genre can do anything particularly new until Portal, when it sort of did do something new.
Yeah.
That's how I felt about that. I was able. Well, I at the time I compared Half-Life 2 to San Andreas, and San Andreas came out, decisively on top, and that's the moment where I decided that I'd kind of gone off Half-Life a bit, which we haven't, because I've got enough loyalty to it that when Half-Life Episode 3 comes out, I will buy it immediately.
Did you play through Episodes 1 and 2 as well?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a matter of different tastes, but really, like, for me, San Andreas for me isn't even mentionable in the same sentence as the Half-Life series in terms of sophistication and in terms of just really, really, like, you're right, it's a much, much more funneled design. You're kind of led by the hand through it, but it's so tight. And the other great illusion that Valve was always kind of able to conjure almost effortlessly is, despite the fact that it's a really linear experience, and despite the fact you are essentially being led by the hand through a series of events which you can't divert from, that I always get this feeling like the world is going on without me. I always get this feeling in the game like the world exists independently of me, and that I'm just being given this really privileged insight into a really exciting little snippet of that, you know? And whereas, the possibility space that exists in San Andreas for me is too open. It's too, yes, it's brilliant in that the player has ultimate freedom, but I don't think necessarily ultimate freedom should be the goal for games designers. I think that it can result in boredom. I remember a lot of time playing San Andreas, driving around the countryside, kind of thinking, oh Christ, I wish there was another car to steal. This one's a bit slow, or I wish there was more people to run over. I don't know. It's just, for me, San Andreas was, it's by far my least favourite GTA game, I have to say.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that ultimately, over time, I came to feel exactly the same way about San Andreas. Like, once the whole game was opened up, and if I had to get from Las Vegas, or if I were in Las Vegas and I jumped into a plane, and like was flying around for a bit and then got shot down or crashed it, and I found myself in San Andreas and thinking, it's going to take me 45 minutes of real actual life to get back to where I was.
Yeah.
And then I did think, it's too big. I completely agree with that. I think San Andreas is too big. For me, Vice City is the pinnacle of the series.
Yeah.
And I really like. I played The Ballad of Gay Tony recently, and that's very, very good indeed as well.
Yeah, I've not touched upon that yet, but everyone, by all reports, it seems to be one of the best things of the whole kind of GTA 4 experience.
That's so good, yeah. And if you buy the disc version, like secondhand on Amazon for about 12 or 13 quid, it's better than GTA 4. Honestly, I think it's really, really good.
Okay, cool.
Anyway, well, that was pretty good debate on. Something unrelated.
Yeah.
Oh yes, so the Rumour Miner, incidentally, just in case you're still interested, has a 50% success rate with GDC. So what are we saying? You're going to keep him on?
I think that probably there are going to be various government incentives and raising political pressure, not to mention the various red top headlines that are going to enforce a prolonged stay for the Rumour Miner. But ultimately, yeah, we've got our eye on him.
Certainly, yeah. The honeymoon period is over.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay then. Well, let's leave the Rumour Mine.
Let's leave the Rumour Mine before we talk about other games that aren't iPhone related any longer.
Rumour. Rumour.
You know, sometimes I feel a little bit like it's we have too much power. Because you're the editor, you know, and because you take part in this podcast, we're basically, you know, we're just going off on our own whims. And that's great, and it's really good fun, but it means that quite a lot of the time we're not talking about iPhone games, but hey.
No, that's certainly true, but you know, it's definitely must be interesting though, isn't it? Must be. Things, our opinions about things, I mean, you know, God, people must be interested in hearing them.
Absolutely.
I don't know why they wouldn't be. Well, let's share our opinions about some games then.
Yeah, let's bring it back. Bring it back to iPhone. Sure.
Yeah. Well, you can talk about Street Fighter because you've been playing that.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to confess that I have played but one fight of Street Fighter 4 on the iPhone. Literally just one fight. I was Ken. I chose the red suit, and I fought against some character in a sort of blue tunic that I've not come across before. So he's obviously a new character for the Street Fighter 4 series.
Where were you, Ken? He's called Abel.
Abel, that's right. That's the one. Yeah.
Do you always choose the same character? Are you?
I almost always go Ken or Ryu. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Actually, always Ryu. I'm playing it in the background so that people can get a sense of the. It's like a soundtrack. Carry on.
Yeah. So, I'll tell you something. 45 seconds with this game is long enough to fall in love with it, I think. Like, I really did feel instantly upon picking it. I was very trepidatious about even playing this game, because Street Fighter 2 is, you know, it's held in such high esteem amongst gamers, myself included. It holds a very special place in my heart and my memory as a gamer, as a youngin. And this is the game that, you know, everyone's been saying, oh, you know, this is the game that's finally better than Street Fighter 2 in that genre, you know? And I've not played it long enough, nearly long enough, to make that sort of a judgment, but I can say that it feels like putting on a very familiar and well-worn, comfortable shoe the second you start playing this game. And the one thing that I was really, really nervous about with the iPhone is that it wasn't going to flow, that you were going to have all this kind of horrendous stickiness with the controls, and that it was going to be really sort of, you know, choppy and a bit stop-starty. And it's not at all. As you can hear in the background with Rob, the combat flows beautifully. It really is fast. The moves string together nice and quickly. It really does kind of just... It just flows, you know? It's got that same sense of urgency and that same sense of immediacy that Street Fighter 2 had, which is a really, really good thing. Visually, it's a brilliant-looking game. I mean, it really is an absolutely excellent-looking title. I mean, gone are the really, really detailed 3D backgrounds of the home console version, but in their place, you've got still, you know, really nice, decent backgrounds that are reasonably detailed, and the characters themselves are, you know, I'm sure that, you know, to the trained eye, or if you've played a lot of Street Fighter 4, they're quite a bit less detailed, like significantly less detailed than the console versions. But for the purpose of you know, smashing a few faces on your iPhone, they really do look, you know, as close as you would like them to be. You know, they're pretty indistinguishable is the wrong word, but they're close. You know, they look really smooth and fluid. There's, you know, just lots of incidental details. It's just a good-looking game. And, yeah, really, it's a majorly confident thumbs up from me. I'm very, very, very pleased with this, and I think I'm probably going to play it quite a lot over the next few weeks.
Yeah, it's a success, isn't it? A surprise success to a lot of people. Yeah. It does look brilliant. I've just had... I'm hitting a woman, Chun-Li... You know, she agreed to participate in this.
You're talking, so it's my turn to play. Take advantage of
it. Okay, so you're playing. Well, I'm playing as well. Basically, this is we're both. Yeah, so it does. It looks very good. Street Fighter 4. I would argue that Street Fighter 4 is not particularly different from Street Fighter 2. I suppose it's just more fancy in HD. But yeah, no, it's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah.
Street Fighter 2. It is maximum price. It costs the most that anything can cost. Well, any game can cost on the App Store, i.e. $5.99, $9.99. So there is that to think about. I'm obsessed with price. I think how much something costs has everything to do with whether or not you should buy it. Controversially, maybe. But I do think it's worth it. You know, $5.99, it's it's as good as any other $5.99 game. It definitely is a very good game. It's a big shame that there's no multiplayer over the internet, but it does have Bluetooth, so that's, you know, that's one thing. I haven't had a go. Tracy's had a go in San Francisco, and he says it's good. It works, so that's fine.
Okay.
I'm fighting Guile. Is it Guile or Guile or never?
Guile. I think it's Guile.
He's a prat, isn't he?
I'm fighting Guile as well just now, bizarrely.
Jesus, are you winning?
What a stupid haircut he's got.
Yeah, bloody military man. I'm not sure what his commanding officer would have to say about him.
No.
Brawling on the airfield.
And that flat top haircut is certainly not the sort of thing that you could ask for when you go into the military barber. It's skinhead or nothing.
He looks like Iceman out of
he does.
Top Gun. Which, yeah. I only saw about a year ago. Got it for Christmas off a friend.
What, so, like, really?
For the first time. It is absurd. It is an absurd film.
It really is. It's like, it's is it Michael Bay?
Bruckheimer?
It's Bruckheimer, that's right, yeah. Oh, it's complete. It's like, it is like the actual live action version of Team America.
Yeah, but without any irony. It's just,
yeah.
Just all the, yeah, I thought it was hilarious. All the kind of, yeah, bum slapping sort of macho, yeah, you're the best of the best.
You mean
you're the best of the best.
The thinly veiled homoeroticism.
There was
very
a strong,
thinly veiled.
There was a very strong homoerotic, like the when they're playing
volleyball
on the beach, and it's just so. I mean, there's no reason why not. I suppose. I mean, a filmmaker would sexualize women in exactly the same way.
Yeah.
So you could imagine watching the film, and I wouldn't think twice if in Top Gun there was a sequence where some women in bikinis were playing volleyball. But it's somehow, just because of the way society is. Because it's less usual, it seems funny that he's sexualizing a group of young men in exactly the same way.
Yeah,
it just comes across strangely. There's no reason why it should be, but it just looks
yeah.
And and his relationship with Iceman and the way, you know, that kind of you're a maverick, you're a loose cannon, but
you get the job done.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
it was the most absurd thing I've ever seen, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's good.
In a weird way.
It's good.
Yes. So that's Street Fighter 4.
that's to do with Street Fighter, people, because Guile... No, sorry, yeah, because Guile looks like Iceman, from who was played by the actor Val Kilmer in the film Top Gun, directed by Jerry Bruckheimer, who, by the way, on another point, is actually about to release the film The Prince of Persia. Which is a video game license.
He's not a director, is he? He's a producer. I'm looking this up.
Oh, really? I thought he was the director. All right, never mind.
I know he's a producer, but I'm going to see who directed Top Gun. We could just look. This is the thing about the internet, is we don't really need to. Okay, yes, it was. Top Gun was directed by Tony Scott, and it was produced. Who's the producer? Doesn't it say the producer? It's Bruckheimer. Oh, God, this is riveting, I imagine.
Jesus, I'm getting my ass absolutely handed to me on a plate by Chun-Li here.
Yeah. Okay, so it was... Top Gun was directed by Tony Scott and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer. Jerry Bruckheimer is a producer rather than a director.
Okay.
So, what film did you just say?
The Prince of Persia.
Prince of Persia, director... is going to be. So this is the world now. Oh no, it was the film. It actually came up first. It was directed by Mike Newell, but produced by Bruckheimer. Mike Newell also directed The Young Adventures of Indiana Jones, Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. It's probably his most famous.
Right. Okay.
Recent film. Oh, and he's. Oh, he's directing something about Alexander Litvinenko, the Russian double agent, was he? Who was killed. He was poisoned with polonium in a restaurant in London. The Hero. Chillingo's recent...
good work.
iPhone game.
Someone had to do something.
Yeah. It's kind of like The Incredibles. It's a popular sort of sub-genre. We live in a kind of postmodern, ironic time, don't we, culturally, where you can't just have a hero. You've got to have a kind of parody of a hero, and that's what we have in this game. So you play a hero who flies around a set of towns called things like Simpleville, Sparkshire, Vermington, Splinterwood, these little invented places on a little globe that you spin around. You unlock them progressively. You finish one, you unlock the other. And the way you finish them is you have a fame meter. So this, again, is a bit like The Incredibles. You know, fame is important to celebrities and to heroes. Heroes are kind of like celebrities. So you have a fame meter, and that constantly goes down as you're going around the level. And to keep it charged, you've got to do things like, well, you've got to do heroic deeds. Save babies that are falling from windows, kill large insects, thwart robbers, defuse bombs, things like that. And also, you fly past buildings and there are people hanging out the windows of buildings, and if you fly past them, they slap hands with you.
Yeah, you can do some high fives, yeah.
Yeah, so there's that as well. And by these means, you keep your fame meter recharged, and you've got to, you know, whether it be stopping robbers, defusing bombs, whatever, you've got to do a certain amount of that in order to finish the level. So typically, if you lose, it'll say you lose 35% fame meter diminished entirely. But it doesn't use that phraseology. I'm 3 levels in. I've unlocked as far as Vermington. I've got stuck on Vermington a bit. I've failed to complete it twice. You know, I'm sure I'll be able to get there in the end. It looks like there's sort of like 15 or so levels, 12 or 15 levels. So it's a fairly challenging game, I would say. Not a huge game. I don't know what to say about it, because I get the feeling that it was looking like it was going to be really good, but I'm not actually enjoying playing it very much at all.
You're not? Right, okay.
Because it's very like fiddly. And I think there's a point I've raised before about thumb stickiness levels. and I think that's crucial. I mean, it's crucial in Street Fighter as well. But in this too, there needs to be a certain amount of... I feel like my thumb gets too stuck to the screen, basically. Okay. So as I'm trying to steer my guy around, it's very fiddly and frustrating. It reminds me a little bit of the feeling of, you know, when you used to have a mouse with a ball in it, and
and
a bit of fluff got in, and it wouldn't quite work. Like you'd try and do a little gentle movement, but when you did the movement, it wouldn't register it. But then because you use a mouse so much all day, like that feeling is actually, it becomes an extension of your body.
Yeah.
And then that feeling of the mouse not reacting and having to take it off and do that sudden big movement is actually kind of fundamentally upsetting in a weird sort of way. Well, it's a bit like that for me. Like I feel like I can't quite steer the guy properly. There's some skill, there's a knack to it. You've got to, this guy has a bit of a turning circle. You can't just turn on a dime. So you steer about the place,
move quite quickly. I mean, I didn't find the same steering problems that you had, but I can see that, you know, because it does move quite fast, it can be a bit tricky sometimes. You've got to kind of, in advance of your target, you've got to kind of start your steer quite far in advance of your target sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a sort of a knack to it.
Yeah.
Which I clearly don't have. So there's that. And the gameplay itself seems to be quite... I'm only 3 levels in, so I don't know where it goes from here. But it basically involves... these little arrows appear on the screen, and you've got to chase them. Essentially, you've got to go towards where the arrows are, and they'll either lead you towards... You know, in the case of what I'm playing now, bees. There are lots of bees in this level, and I've got to take them all down. And so you follow the arrows, you get to the bees, and that's really kind of it. So you're essentially just constantly chasing arrows. Some arrows have circles around them, which would indicate that they're more urgent than others.
Following babies, for example.
Yeah. But apart from that, it's all very... it's just kind of the same thing. There doesn't seem to be a massive amount of variety in the kind of things you do. It's really just chasing, or, you know, flying in the direction of little arrows, trying to get things. So that's it. That's the hero. I don't, you know, I'm so early on in the game that I am reluctant to hazard any kind of verdict, particularly since what I've been hearing other people's impressions of it are that it's the more positive than mine. So I'll back off and just wait until a proper Pocket Gamer review comes in.
It's got that polish, though, you must say.
It's very polished, yeah. The guy, and it's got the whole sort of design is very in keeping with the whole thing. It's very, 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 what's that film called, which I mentioned already?
The Incredibles.
The Incredibles. It's very Incredibles.
Yeah.
And so this dialogue between each of the things, and you've got, so it's got the whole thing, really. It's got characters, it's got a really Pixar-like look, very kind of complete, polished. You know, it's a Chillingo game, so you'd expect it would have a bit of kind of a certain level of polish to it, a certain level of clout behind it. And yeah, in that regard, it's fine, definitely. So, in summary, it seems to be fairly repetitive. The controls may frustrate some people, although not others. And check pocketgamer.co.uk for a full review in the next few days.
All right.
Bee invasion. Yeah, bees. Killing bees. Yeah, I'll put that down. Because clearly I can't play a game and talk at the same time. That is a lesson I've learned. So that's it. That's that game. So what have we got to do now? Nothing, really.
Nothing. That's it. Just got to say cheerio.
Wow, yeah. We used to do a competition, but bloody listeners didn't enter.
That's they didn't like it, no.
That's why I dislike them so much and why why we talk about console games now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's goodbye from me. Tracy, you'll be back next week. But in the meantime, it's goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me.
It's goodbye from Fraser. And yeah, goodbye. Oh, go to pocketgamer.co.uk. Read our reviews, read our news, all kinds of things like that. And give us a rating on iTunes of no fewer than 5 stars. Goodbye.
Cheerio.